Welcome to Throwing Mountains Weekly Strength. I'm your host, Chris Bollinger. For the next 17 minutes or so, we're going to draw strength from the Bible. I encourage you to make this a daily practice on your own. This is our fifth week of wrestling with tough topics in the Bible and the Christian life. This week's tough topic is failure. The Bible passage for this episode is Psalm 73, 21-28, which is the end of a psalm written by Asaph. I'll read it from the New King James Version. Thus my heart was grieved, and I was vexed in my mind. I was so foolish and ignorant. I was like a beast before you. Nevertheless, I am continually with you. You hold me by my right hand. You will guide me with your counsel, and afterward receive me to glory. Whom have I in heaven but you? And there is none upon earth that I desire besides you. My flesh and my heart fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. For indeed, those who are far from you shall perish. You have destroyed all those who desert you for harlotry. But it is good for me to draw near to God. I have put my trust in the Lord God, that I may declare all your works. Athletes are measured by their successes, but some athletes are remembered most for their failures. In the book 52 Weeks of Strength for Men, I talk about the failures of two athletes, George Foreman and Ernest Biner. Foreman's story probably is familiar to you, but I doubt that Biner's is, unless you are a long-suffering Cleveland Browns fan like I am. So I'll tell Biner's story here. In the mid to late 1980s, the Browns had a potent offense that included a strong running attack and a diverse passing game led by quarterback Bernie Kosar. The running game often featured two runners in the backfield, Kevin Mack and Ernest Biner. Mack was a Pro Bowler who got most of the rushing attempts. Biner added versatility and sure-handed receptions. Mack and Biner helped the Browns make the playoffs in 1986. The team advanced to the AFC Championship game against the Denver Broncos and had a 20-13 lead with just over 5 minutes left in the game. Denver quarterback John Elway then engineered what became known as the drive, marching the Broncos 98 yards and scoring a tying touchdown at the end of the fourth quarter. Denver won the game in overtime. The next season, the Browns and Broncos again met in the AFC Championship game. This time, Denver got out to a 21-3 halftime lead and then a 28-10 lead in the third quarter. Then Biner went to work. On the Browns' next drive, he made a key third down catch and then a touchdown catch to make it 28-17. After a Denver punt, Biner capped off a scoring drive by running the ball into the end zone to make it 28-24. After a Denver field goal, Biner made a 53-yard catch on a 3rd and 4. 6 plays later, Cleveland tied the game at 31. Then Denver scored a touchdown to make it 38-31. The Browns had one more chance, with less than 4 minutes left. Biner ran for 17 yards, then two. Two first down completions to receiver Brian Brennan, a Denver offsides, and a Biner run gave the Browns a 1st and 10 at the Denver 13. After an incompletion and another Denver offsides, the Browns had a 2nd and 5 at the Denver 8. Biner took a handoff, powered past the Broncos line, and headed for the goal line to tie the game, but he was stripped of the ball at the 2-yard line, and the Browns lost. Biner's name is forever linked with that play, known simply as the fumble. Browns fans couldn't forgive Biner, and after one more season, Cleveland traded him to Washington. But that's not the end of Ernest Biner's story. In the film It's a Wonderful Life, the main character, George Bailey, also is known for his failures. At least, he thinks he is. As a young adult, George has big plans, as he reveals to Mary Hatch, who has just graduated from high school.
Okay, then, I'll throw a rock at the old Granville house.
Oh, no, don't. I love that old house.
No, you see, you make a wish and then try and break some glass in. You got to be a pretty good shot nowadays, too.
Oh, no, George, don't. It's full of romance, that old place. I'd like to live in it.
In that place?
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't live in as a ghost. Now watch. It says right in the second floor there, see?
What'd you wish, George?
Well, not just one wish, a whole hatful. Mary, I know what I'm going to do tomorrow and the next day and next year and the year after that. I'm shaking the dust of this crummy little town off my feet and I'm going to see the world. Italy, Greece, the Parthenon, the Colosseum. Then I'm coming back here and go to college and see what they know. And then I'm going to build things. I'm going to build airfields. I'm going to build skyscrapers 100 stories high. I'm going to build bridges a mile long.
George's dreams are dashed when his father dies. The most powerful man in town, Henry Potter, moves to close the Bailey family business, a building and loan. The board of directors for the business fends off Potter's motion, but there's one condition.
I think that's all we'll need you for, George. I know you're anxious to make a train.
Oh, I have a taxi waiting downstairs.
I want the board to know that George gave up his trip to Europe to help straighten things out here these past few months. Good luck to your school, George.
Good luck, George. Good luck, George. Good luck, George.
Now we come to the real purpose of this meeting, to appoint a successor to our dear friend, Peter Bailey.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to get to my real purpose.
Wait just a minute now.
Wait for what? I claim this institution is not necessary to this town. Therefore, Mr. Chairman, I make a motion to dissolve this institution and turn its assets and liabilities over to the receiver.
Body, you dirty contemptible. I'll read this next time. George, did you hear what happened?
I'll be right down.
Yeah, hey, you'll miss your train. You're a week late for school already. Go on.
What's going on?
Oh, never mind. Don't worry about that. They're putting us out of business. So what? I can get another job. I'm only 55.
56.
Go on, go on. Hey, look, you gave up your boat trip. Now you don't want to miss college too, do you?
George, they voted Potter down. What? They want to keep it going. They got one condition. Huh? Only one condition.
What's that?
And that's the best part of it. They've appointed George here as executive secretary to take his father's place.
Oh, no, but Uncle Billy is...
You can keep him on, that's all right. As secretary, you can hire anyone you like.
Well, Dr. Cameron, let's get this thing straight. I'm leaving right now. I'm going to school. This is my last chance. Uncle Billy here, he's your man.
But, George, they'll vote with Potter otherwise.
Keeping the building and loan financially solvent takes everything George has. It even costs him a honeymoon with Mary.
If either you two see a stranger around here, it's me.
Hey, look, there's somebody driving this cab.
Bert, the cop sent this over. He said to float away to Happy Land on the bubbles.
Oh, look at this old Bert champagne.
By the way, where are you two going on this here now, honeymoon?
Where are we going? Look at this. There's the kitty, Ernie. Here, come on, count her, Mary.
Oh, I feel like a bootlegger's wife. Look.
You know what we're going to do? We're going to shoot the works. A whole week in New York, a whole week in Bermuda, the highest hotels, the oldest champagne, the richest caviar, the hottest music, and the prettiest wife.
Oh, that does it. Then what?
Then what, honey?
After that, who cares?
No, that doesn't. Come here.
Don't look now, but there's something funny going on over there at the bank, George. I've never really seen one, but that's got all the earmarks of being a run.
Can't you keep it? Can't you understand what's happening here? Don't you see what's happening? Potter isn't selling, Potter's buying. And why? Because we're panicky and he's not, that's why. He's picking up some bargain. Now, we can get through this thing, all right. We've got to stick together, though. We've got to have faith in each other.
But my husband hasn't worked in over a year, and I need money.
How am I going to live until the bank opens?
I got Dr. Bills to pay. I need cash.
I can't keep my kids on faith. I've got to have...
How much do you need?
Hey! I got $2,000. Here's $2,000. This will tide us over to the bank reopens. All right, Tom, how much do you need?
$242.
No, Tom, just...
During World War II, while George's younger brother Harry becomes a war hero, George has to stay home because of a childhood injury that he suffered while saving Harry when Harry went through the ice. George can never get ahead. His life seems to consist of just keeping his head above water. And then, just before Christmas of 1945, things get really bad for George. His Uncle Billy misplaces $8,000, a huge amount of money then, instead of depositing it in the bank. Potter ends up with the cash. George takes responsibility for the debt to the bank, and Potter has a warrant issued for George's arrest. Seeing no escape from his predicament, George decides to kill himself so that his family can gain the benefit of his $15,000 life insurance policy. He prepares to jump into the icy river that runs through Bedford Falls. But that's not the end of George Bailey's story. The Bible is filled with stories of failure. Here are a few. David committed adultery with Uriah's wife, got her pregnant, and had Uriah killed. David's son Solomon married hundreds of foreign women and allowed them to turn his heart away from God. After Jesus was arrested, Peter denied three times that he knew Jesus, and the disciples abandoned Jesus and hid. The Apostle Paul's anger caused a split with his closest ally Barnabas, and the two never saw each other again. Why are these stories and many others in the Bible? One reason is to remind us that failure doesn't have to define us. God can use our failures to teach us and others to rely more on Him. Ernest Byner won the Super Bowl with the Redskins in 1991, but something even bigger happened to him in D.C. The team of that era was loaded with Christians, including Art Monk and Darryl Green, who befriended Byner. Another Christian, head coach Joe Gibbs, mentored Byner. In the middle of the Super Bowl season, Byner became a born-again Christian and was baptized in Green's hot tub. He, Monk, and two other teammates founded the Good Samaritan Foundation to prepare youth in Southeast D.C., one of the roughest sections of any U.S. city, for leadership in the community and the workplace. As for George Bailey, you probably know what happens to him. Here are the highlights. A guardian angel, Clarence, intervenes to prevent George's suicide. Clarence explains that George is not a failure, but George rejects that notion.
I don't know whether I like it very much, being seen around with an angel without any wings.
Oh, I've got to earn them. And you'll help me, won't you?
Sure, sure. How?
By letting me help you.
Only one way you can help me. You don't happen to have 8,000 bucks on you.
Oh, no, no. We don't use money in heaven.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I keep forgetting it. Comes in pretty handy down here, bub.
Oh, tut, tut, tut.
I found it out a little late. I'm worth more dead than alive.
Now, look, you mustn't talk like that. I won't get my wings with that attitude. You just don't know all that you've done. If it hadn't been for you...
Yeah, if it hadn't been for me, everybody'd be a lot better off. My wife and my kids and my friends. I mean, look, little fella, why you go off and haunt somebody else.
No, now you don't understand. I've got my job.
Oh, shut up, will you?
Oh, this isn't going to be so easy. Yeah, so you still think killing yourself would make everyone feel happier, eh?
Well, I don't know. I guess you're right. I suppose it'd been better if I'd never been born at all.
What'd you say?
I said I wish I'd never been born.
Oh, you mustn't say things like that. You... Wait a minute. Wait a minute. That's an idea.
Clarence grants George his wish, and George sees how, even though he feels like a failure, his actions, many of which seemed insignificant, have blessed many lives.
Clarence! Clarence! Help me, Clarence! Get me back! Get me back! I don't care what happens to me! Get me back to my wife and kids! Help me, Clarence, please! Please! I want to live again! I want to live again. I want to live again. Please, God, let me live again.
George still doesn't have the $8,000 he needs, but Mary has called everyone in town to ask them to help George. Many people respond to Mary's request by praying for George, and many show up at the Bailey house to contribute financially.
There you are, George. I got the faculty all left out of it. Here's some beautiful...
Now get this. It's from London.
Oh.
Mr. Gower cabled you need cash. Stop.
My office instructed to advance you up to $25,000. Stop. Oh, yeah. Hee-haw and Merry Christmas, Sam Wainwright.
New York.
Oh, I left right in the middle of it as soon as I got Mary's telegram. Good idea, Ernie. A toast. To my big brother, George, the richest man in town.
On top of the pile of dollars that George's friends have contributed, he finds the copy of the book Tom Sawyer that Clarence had been carrying. Inside is this handwritten message. Dear George, remember, no man is a failure who has friends. Thanks for the wings. Love, Clarence. Next week, we'll look at the tough topic of integrity. I hope you'll join me for that. Please pick up a copy of 52 Weeks of Strength for Men. You'll find it to be a good resource on this journey. Have a good week, men.